Hi, I'm Amy Goodman, host of Democracy Now! For more than 15 years, CJSF 90.1 FM has been bringing Democracy Now! To the greater Vancouver area every weekday at 11 a.m. From New York, this is Democracy Now!
Ground operations by the Israel Defense Forces and continued bombardments are hitting civilians, hospitals, refugee camps, mosques, church, and UN facilities, including shelters. No one is safe.
The UN Secretary General repeats his call for an immediate ceasefire as the death toll in Gaza tops 10,000. Including 4,000 children. We'll speak to an American doctor who just left Gaza through Rafah and the founder of the Palestine Children's Relief Fund, which runs the only pediatric cancer unit in Gaza. Israel's just ordered the hospital with the unit to be fully evacuated. Plus, we look at how President Biden's refusal to support a ceasefire in Gaza could impact his re-election chances next year, as his support among Arab Americans is plummeting. And Donald Trump took the witness stand Monday in a civil fraud case brought by the New York Attorney General Letitia James that puts the future of his business empire in jeopardy.
He rambled. He hurled insults. But we expected that. At the end of the day, the documentary evidence demonstrated that, in fact, he falsely inflated his assets to basically enrich himself and his family.
All that and more coming up. Welcome to Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, the War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. The United Nations warns a tragedy of colossal proportions is underway in the Gaza Strip, 1 month after Israel laid siege to the Palestinian territory and began a round-the-clock bombardment. On Monday, UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres renewed his urgent call for an immediate ceasefire, citing the more than 10,000 Palestinians killed by Israel strikes. Over 4,000 of the dead are children.
Gaza is becoming a graveyard for children. Hundreds of girls and boys are reportedly being killed or injured every day.
Earlier today, the Israeli military ordered the immediate evacuation of Al-Rantisi Children's Hospital in Gaza City. Israel already shelled the hospital 2 days ago and is threatening to bomb the building. After headlines, we'll speak with the president and founder of the Palestine Children's Relief Fund, which established the Gaza Strip's only pediatric cancer center at that hospital. On Monday, Israel's military admitted it struck a convoy of ambulances outside Al-Shifa Hospital last week. Those attacks killed 15 people and wounded dozens. This is Hanid Abdel Hakim Saad, a patient who narrowly survived the assault.
The ambulance came to take us to Egypt for treatment. While we were on the road, they started firing at us, and the ambulance in front of us was hit. The people in front of us were martyred, and we were moved back to Al-Shifa Hospital. I lost consciousness and woke up in the hospital. They told me that I had debris in my mouth and that I had a 3% chance to make it, that my condition was very critical. I have a fracture in the head. My shoulder is dislocated.
Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu said Monday Israel will take responsibility for security in the Gaza Strip indefinitely once its military operations in the besieged Palestinian territory are complete. Netanyahu also rejected international calls for a ceasefire to allow the unfettered delivery of humanitarian aid.
Well, there'll be no general ceasefire in Gaza without the release of our hostages. As far as tactical little pauses, an hour here, an hour there, we've had them before. I suppose we'll check the circumstances in order to enable goods, humanitarian goods to come in, or our hostages, individual hostages to leave. But I don't think there's going to be a general ceasefire.
On Sunday, Netanyahu suspended Israel's Jerusalem Affairs and Heritage Minister, Amichai Eliyahu, after he claimed there are no non-combatants in the Gaza Strip and said that dropping a nuclear bomb on the Gaza Strip's an option. This comes just days after an Israeli lawmaker from Netanyahu's ruling Likud party took to social media to incite genocide, writing on the social media site X, formerly known as Twitter, Galit Distel Artbaryan wrote, quote, "Erase Gaza from the face of the earth. Let the Gazan monsters rush to the southern border and flee into Egypt or die," unquote. South Africa has recalled its ambassador to Israel for consultations, joining a growing list of nations that have withdrawn diplomatic personnel in protest of Israel's assault on the Gaza Strip. Foreign Minister Naledi Pandor said Monday South Africa is extremely concerned at the continued killing of children and innocent civilians in the Palestinian territories.
We believe the nature of response by Israel has become one of collective punishment, which falls fully outside of the practice of international humanitarian and international human rights law.
Over the weekend, the governments of Chad and Honduras also recalled diplomats and embassy staff from Israel. And at the Vatican, Pope Francis on Sunday again renewed his urgent plea for a ceasefire and humanitarian aid for Gaza. In Washington state, hundreds of protesters peacefully blockaded the entrance to the port of Tacoma Monday, delaying the loading of weapons onto a U.S. military supply vessel bound for Israel. It's the same ship that met a similar protest Friday in the port of Oakland. Organizers say they'll continue to track the ship's travel and will hold more protests wherever it sails. Here in New York, about 500 members of Jewish Voice for Peace and their allies rallied at the Statue of Liberty Monday to demand a ceasefire in Gaza. Protesters wore black T-shirts reading, "Not in our name." In a statement, Jay Saper of Jewish Voice for Peace said, quote, "The famous words of our Jewish ancestor, Emma Lazarus, etched unto this very monument, compel us to take action supporting the Palestinians of Gaza yearning to breathe free," he said. Aid agencies are sounding the alarm over the plight of Afghan refugees who've been forced to sleep in the open without proper food, shelter, sanitation, and water after fleeing Pakistan to avoid arrest and deportation. An estimated 270,000 people have crossed the border after Pakistan's government gave undocumented immigrants until the end of October to leave. Authorities have since gone door to door demanding immigration documents and have used bulldozers to raise homes in Afghan communities. Human Rights Watch warns the crackdown has led to detentions, beatings, and extortion. This is 50-year-old Afghan immigrant Abdul Rahim.
"These people are being very cruel to us. If they had given us 4 to 5 months more, we could have spent the winter here in comfort. Then, God willing, we would have gone back to our country."
Ukraine's government says Russian airstrikes on the Black Sea city of Odessa have wounded 8 people, destroying stocks of food and damaging Ukraine's main grain port. The strikes also damaged several exhibitions at the Odessa Fine Arts Museum. On Monday, Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky ruled out conducting elections in 2024, saying they should remain suspended while Ukraine is under martial law.
"We all understand that now, in wartime, when there are many challenges, it is absolutely irresponsible to engage in topics related to an election in such a frivolous manner. I believe that elections are not appropriate at this time."
Meanwhile, NBC News reports U.S. and European officials have begun quietly talking to Ukraine's government about possible peace negotiations with Russia to end the war and what Ukraine might need to give up in order to reach a deal. Here in the United States, Donald Trump took the witness stand Monday in a civil fraud case brought by the state of New York against the former president and his businesses. Trump was repeatedly admonished by Judge Arthur Engoron for testimony that veered off topic and for lashing out against the court and New York Attorney General Letitia James, whom he called a political hack. James is seeking $250 million after accusing Trump, his two oldest sons, the Trump Organization and company executives, of inflating the value of assets. The judge has already ruled Trump is liable for fraud. The trial will determine how much the Trumps will pay in damages. We'll have more on the Trump civil trial in New York later in the broadcast. In Colorado, Another police officer has been acquitted in the 2019 killing of Elijah McClain. McClain's mother, Shanine McClain, wept as the jury declared Aurora officer Nathan Woodyard not guilty of homicide and manslaughter. Elijah McClain, a 23-year-old black young man, was walking home from the store when he was tackled by police, placed in a carotid hold, and injected with the powerful sedative ketamine. Woodyard was the officer who put McClain in a neck hold. Just one of the three officers involved in McClain's killing is facing prison time after being convicted of criminally negligent homicide in October. A second officer was also acquitted last month. In Atlanta, dozens of activists have been arraigned on RICO charges for their involvement in protests against the construction of a massive $90 million police training complex known as Cop City. At least 57 of 61 protesters charged appeared in court Monday as hundreds of other Stop Cop City organizers rallied outside in support. Georgia's Republican Attorney General Christopher Carr issued the sweeping indictment over 2 months ago, using the state's Racketeer Influence and Corrupt Organizations Act to target the protesters. Many of them had already been charged with domestic terrorism. The ACLU and other rights groups have condemned the charges in an attempt to silence the Stop Cop City movement. In Illinois, the father of the suspect behind the mass shooting at last year's July 4th parade in Highland Park has pleaded guilty to 7 misdemeanor counts of reckless conduct. The charges carry a maximum sentence of 1 year in prison. Prosecutors say during the trial, Robert Cremo Jr. knew that his 19-year-old son had a history of threatening deadly violence, yet sponsored his son's application for a permit to purchase an assault rifle. The July 4th attack killed 7 people and left 48 others wounded. And voters across the United States are heading to the polls today for statewide and local elections. In Ohio, voters will weigh in on a measure that seeks to establish the right to an abortion in the state constitution. Ohioans will also vote on legalizing recreational marijuana. In Virginia, where the entire legislature is on the ballot, Democrats are vying to retain their narrow control of the Senate and flip the House of Delegates to stop Republican Governor Glenn Youngkin from enacting his right-wing agenda on abortion, education, taxes, and other issues. Maine has a ballot initiative that could lead to the creation of the U.S.'s first statewide publicly owned electric utility company. Kentucky, Louisiana, and Mississippi all have gubernatorial races. And those are some of the headlines. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. When we come back, we'll speak with an American doctor who just left Gaza through Rafah. And we'll speak with the founder of her organization, Palestine Children's Relief Fund, which runs the only pediatric cancer unit in Gaza. Israel's just ordered the hospital housing the unit to be fully evacuated. Back in 30 seconds. Of the Narcissus by Palestinian artist Miral Ayad. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman in New York, joined by Democracy Now! Co-host Juan Gonzalez in Chicago. Hi, Juan.
Hi, Amy, and welcome to all of our listeners and viewers across the country and around the world.
Well, Israel is threatening to bomb a children's hospital in Gaza that houses the enclave's only pediatric cancer unit. Earlier today, the Israeli military ordered the immediate evacuation of Al-Rantisi Children's Hospital in Gaza City. Israel already shelled the hospital 2 days ago. This comes as Palestinian health officials say the Israeli bombardment of Gaza has killed over 10,000 Palestinians, including 4,000 children, since October 7th, when Hamas attacked Israel, killing up to 1,400 people while seizing about 240 hostages. On Monday, UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres repeated his call for an immediate ceasefire.
Gaza is becoming a graveyard for children. Hundreds of girls and boys are reportedly being killed or injured every day. More journalists have reportedly been killed over a four-week period than in any conflict in at least three decades. More United Nations aid workers have been killed than in any comparable period in the history of our organization.
We begin today's show with two guests. Steve Sosby is the president and founder of the Palestine Children's Relief Fund, an organization that provides medical and humanitarian aid to Palestinian children in Gaza and the West Bank. The fund runs the pediatric cancer unit inside RNTC Children's Hospital. He splits his time between the occupied West Bank and Kent, Ohio, where he joins us today. And we're joined by Dr. Barbara Zind, pediatrician who traveled to Gaza October 6 to support the Palestine Children's Relief Fund after nearly a month trapped in Gaza. She was finally evacuated through the Rafah border crossing and arrived back home Monday. She's joining us from Grand Junction, Colorado. We welcome you both to Democracy Now! Steve Sosby, let's begin with you. Can you talk about what's happening at RNTC Children's Hospital in Gaza City and the overall collapse of the medical system in Gaza? We saw a tweet of yours a few days ago asking, had the hospital been bombed, you have a ward there, the only one for children with cancer.
Yeah, in 2019, we opened the first and only pediatric oncology department in the Gaza Strip based on the fact that every child prior to that, every single child in Gaza with cancer had to travel outside for care that they couldn't get locally. And that was a problem because that required permits from the Israeli military, which were often either delayed or not provided for these kids with cancer. So we started a campaign through grassroots fundraising and raised enough money to open a cancer department in the main pediatric hospital in Gaza City, where since 2019 until October 7th, hundreds of children had had life-saving care, professional care, through local services and through the support of our international teams coming in. We provide chemotherapy, drugs, child life services, and training for doctors and nurses in that department, in addition to any other support those kids possibly need. Now, since October 7th, obviously, due to the conflict on the ground in Gaza, the services there have been disrupted significantly. However, the department itself is full of children, full of patients with cancer, and in addition, their families who are seeking refuge. Many of them have had their homes destroyed and have no other place to go. So the department itself and the hospital itself is full of refugees, full of people seeking shelter and seeking aid. And in addition to that, the doctors who provide, the oncologists who work at that hospital had to flee Gaza City or have not been able to access the hospital on a regular basis to provide therapy and treatment for the patients. And some of the nurses themselves have had their homes destroyed and family members killed, and they continue to provide services as much as they can. However, 2 days ago, there was a threat to Gaza, to the hospital itself, and it was struck yesterday, about 30 hours ago, it was struck by a rocket. And the floor above the department was destroyed, and part of the department itself was destroyed, killing some children, and not in the department itself, but in the hospital, and destroying part of the department that we had built. Now, as of today, and some of the family members have fled, but unfortunately, there's no place. We're trying to get them south out of Gaza City, so possibly evacuating them out of Gaza and getting them continued care in Egypt or in Jordan. But unfortunately, Gaza itself is encircled, and now, as of now, there was a report this morning from the Israeli military that they're demanding the evacuation of the hospital because they consider it a combat area. And unfortunately, a lot of the families have no place to go. They have no place to be evacuated to. And there's still literally hundreds of children and patients within that hospital. And the increasing sound of bombings and shootings around the department, around the hospital, is increasingly making it difficult for anybody to leave at this time.
And Steve Sosby, could you talk about what the lack of medical care was for the children in Gaza even before October 7th and before the beginning of this horrific round of Israeli attacks?
Yeah, so we started our organization over 30 years ago during the First Intifada to provide medical care for children who were getting being injured on the ground as a result of the uprising and the use of force against the civilian population in the West Bank and Gaza. And over the years, evolved into an organization that brings volunteer medical teams in on a regular basis to the Gaza Strip and West Bank to provide free, specialized medical care to those kids. And over the last few years, we've been the main organization on the ground in Gaza, bringing in international teams of volunteers with providing a variety of different kinds of specialized surgical services and medical services, including pediatric oncology, pediatric cardiac surgery, pediatric neurosurgery, general pediatric surgery, orthopedics, so on and so forth, which don't exist or are underdeveloped within the health sector in Gaza, in an attempt to fill this significant gap of children not having access to quality specialized care and not being able to access that care that may exist in the West Bank or may exist outside of Gaza. We were developing those services locally within the Gaza Strip and treating thousands of children a year in Gaza with this very specialized services. Unfortunately, and this is how Dr. Zinn got stuck in Gaza, is that we have teams rotating on a regular basis in Gaza from all over the world. And she was there at the time of the closure, along with another specialist who was developing artificial limbs for amputees, children who are amputees. And unfortunately, there are literally thousands of kids in Gaza, in addition to those who are being injured now. And we already know that number is graphically high, that there's thousands of kids in Gaza who have non-trauma related injuries who need medical care, kids who are born with congenital defects, kids with heart problems, kids with cancer, kids with cystic fibrosis, kids on dialysis. These are children in addition to those thousands of kids who've been injured over the past month who need specialized care they can't get in Gaza. And as a result of the hospitals now running out of fuel and not able to provide services, as a result of hospitals running out of drugs and services, as a result of specialists and being killed and being injured or not able to access the treatment centers as a result of hospitals closing, thousands of children in Gaza, in addition to those who are being injured, are going without specialized care, and many of them are even dying. And that's actually a huge concern to us. And we hope that we're able to get these kids out as quickly as possible to provide them care outside if they cannot get care within Gaza. But of course, we're asking more importantly for a ceasefire and enabling our medical teams who are standing by, ready to go to Gaza and continue to provide services there. We have several surgical missions ready to go at a moment's notice if we can access Gaza and be able to relieve the doctors there and provide those services directly to those kids.
Yeah, I'd like to bring in Dr. Barbara Zinn, the pediatrician who traveled to Gaza to support the relief efforts of the Palestine Children's Relief Fund. Dr. Zinn, could you talk about your experience while you were there during this Israeli bombardment?
I arrived on October 6th for a three-day mission to see about 100 children that the Palestinian Children's Relief Fund is sponsoring with chronic diseases. And then the morning after I arrived, I was just walking along the beach and saw those missiles fired. And after that, ended up joining other humanitarian aid staff and volunteers going over the next month, going to, you know, three different UN sites for safety and finally one last place, and then getting there the day that the Rafah border opened with our names on a list to exit.
Dr. Barbara Zinn, talk about why you got involved with Palestine Children's Relief Fund and then what it was like. If you can take us on that journey, you were one of a number of foreigners, specialists, humanitarian relief workers inside Gaza as the bombardment began. Can you talk about where you went, whether you were able to get clean water, more importantly, everyone around you, not more importantly, but equally, everyone around you, how you took shelter? You were on TV. We saw you as a bomb went off next to you. You jumped.
I was fortunate, much more fortunate than the Gazans themselves, in that we had administration, the Palestinian Children's Relief Fund worked with other humanitarian organizations, and they could see safe places to move. I've been with this organization since 2010, going over to the West Bank and Gaza almost every year, except for the years I couldn't because of COVID. And it's because of all the great things that they do. It's because the children that I see, I'm not a surgeon, but I feel they help fill in the gaps that medications, special schooling, everything that these children with chronic diseases can't get through the Ministry of Health. And that includes just diabetics getting insulin. And so really life-saving medications that can't be fully provided through the governmental services and health services that are there. So throughout that month, we started in Gaza City and with continuous bombardment. And then everyone was supposed to go to the south. We went to another UN facility in the south. That one was just thousands of people coming in the gates. Usually people go to UN schools, but the UN schools were already full when they ordered the evacuation of the northern part of Gaza. And so people just went to this, it was a vocational school. So it really didn't have facilities. And those people started building things right away. They took wooden pallets. They took bricks. They just started just building a place for their families. And these are extended families, so they are large families. Palestinian Children's Relief Fund has a staff member who's in the last UN facility that we were at, and he's with 150 family members. He has 8 children. He has 19 siblings. So his close relatives are 150 people, and they are living in that southernmost camp. We were fortunate in that we had clean water delivered, but we had 50 people using one toilet versus 400 to 600 people per toilet. I mean, even in our group of a lot of medical workers, we had an outbreak of diarrhea. I can't imagine what it was like outside of our camp as far as that. They had limited water. They had a certain amount of drinking water, which ran out. Our drinking water started to run out. Definitely our water for washing and running the toilet was running out right before we left. We were fortunate to have food, but at the last few days, we ended up computing how much food we needed for 50 people. And at 800 calories a day, we had enough for 2 days until we were able to have a driver go all the way to Gaza City, a dangerous drive, to bring some other foods. But I don't know but we knew that the grocery stores were going to be empty. But out in the camp, they were giving one pita bread per person. And initially, a can of meat for 2 people, and then that went down to 4 people while we were there. So the United Nations was supplying some food, but so limited for those people.
I wanted
and
to
Dr. Zinn,
go ahead,
Dr. Zinn. I'm wondering about the issue not just of the life and death of travails that the Palestinian people are confronting with this bombing, but also if you could talk some about what you see in terms of the mental health, the long-term. We're talking about a population, a complete population that's been traumatized now for years, and now especially with this bombing. Your sense of what the mental health needs of these children will be for years to come.
Well, I think a lot of times I've described Gaza on a good day. So in these other missions that I've gone to Gaza, they're just constantly under siege, really. I mean, food is limited a lot. I mean, fishermen can only go out so far, and that's they can't go to the international water boundaries for fishing. And so food is always limited. Medications are limited. 65% of Gazans are on humanitarian aid all the time. So when we talk about humanitarian aid coming in, it's not just for this conflict. I mean, they're always needing humanitarian aid based on limitations of food and clean water. There's no surface water. So these children live under that stress all the time. They're wonderful, resilient people, but I can't imagine, you know, what it's like to be a child and be with a family that's moving around, has really no place to go that's safe.
I wanted to bring Steve Sosby back into the conversation. This is Israeli Ambassador Gilad Erdan, who was interviewed on CNN on Sunday.
There is no humanitarian crisis in Gaza. In coordination with the U.S. and the U.N., we allowed the number of trucks entering Gaza now with food and medicines to reach almost 100 trucks every day. So we don't see the need for humanitarian pauses right now, because it will only enable Hamas to rearm and regroup.
Your response to this, Steve Sosby? He doesn't see, this is the Israeli ambassador to the United Nations, he doesn't see a humanitarian crisis on the ground right now. And if you can also weave in, for example, the children in your cancer ward, how are they possibly getting chemotherapy right now?
Well, that's an interesting point of view. It's coming from a political perspective and not a realistic one, and not based on reality. The fact is, on the ground, that there is an obvious humanitarian crisis. This is described not only by people on the ground there, but by the United Nations and by other, let's say, objective points of view. The humanitarian crisis is obvious. There's no fuel that's been delivered to Gaza since October 7th. And what does that mean? Well, all of the hospitals in Gaza, every single one of them, depends on fuel to run generators. They're not connected to the electrical grid, because the electrical grid's shut down since October 7th, 11th. So that then even it was, even when it was operating, it only provided electricity for 3 or 4 hours a day, as we all know, prior to October 7th. So therefore, the hospitals are running out of fuel. They're not able to operate. They're not able to provide ventilation for children in the intensive care unit who are severely injured, and there's hundreds of them. They're not able to provide electricity for babies in incubators in the neonatal units. Increasingly, the fuel's running out. We know that in Shifa Hospital, there's only one generator working now. The Indonesian hospital has run out of fuel, and other hospitals have closed. And so I don't know what humanitarian crisis he's not seeing. In addition to that, as Dr. Zinn just mentioned, children and people there are on a significant calorie diet, and that's affecting the entire population. 1.5 million people in Gaza out of 2.2 are displaced. They're living in warehouses, in tents, in other in makeshift places, in UN schools. And those schools are being hit. There are no safe places in Gaza. We've seen the casualty toll, as you mentioned at the beginning of this program, of over 4,000 children.